Talk Central is brought to you by CloudGate, a micro mega company. All the power of a PC, the flexibility of Android, all at a fraction of the cost. For homework or play, available at takealot.com or cloudgate.co.za for only $1,999.
I'm Richard Tonneberg.
And I'm Duncan McLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 124 for the weekend starting 13 March 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like, get drunk on powdered alcohol.
Only sober journalism on Tech Central. On Talk Central this week, we talk about ructions in the telecoms department, as well as network disruptions at Cell C.
Also, we chat about government's plans to create a massive bureaucracy to fight cybercrime and cyberterrorism. And of course, we talk Apple Watch and the new MacBook.
Before we get to that, though, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in a moment.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Well, Richard, I think we need to start with Apple because that was really the big news of the week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it started off with a bang, the keynote or the announcement or the unveiling of the new iWatch in its final form.
Did you watch it live?
I did watch it live. I've also watched it with some commentary from Twitter. I always find those guys add a little interesting flavor to it.
Yeah. I just watched the basic feed and it was very good. It's amazing how I was actually watching and thinking how far this has come since the original iPhone keynote, where you had to sit there watching live blogs on Engadget. Now you can watch it in your own lounge on your TV in HD.
And Apple's also quite good. They're doing their own live blogs now, so I mean, you can actually get the official info right from the horse's mouth, so to speak. And then they're curating it quite nicely.
Are they doing a blog as well?
Well, it's a live blog, so you can just go onto the site and all the screenshots and highlights from any of the keynotes get updated like any live blog would. But they're obviously curating it themselves.
Interesting.
Very cool.
Let's start with the watch. Nothing really new, actually. We've got pricing at last.
Yes.
$17,000 for the top-end one. I'm be rushing out to get that as soon as it arrives.
Yeah, no.
Definitely not.
But it was nice to see it in action, and then they're talking a little bit more about some of the functionality. I think, obviously, the reports we saw afterwards from the journalists that actually had a chance to play with it, that was quite interesting from a point of view as well, of just getting a better understanding of what this product's going to be. But I think the highlight for me, or one of the highlights for me, was the health kit, the developer stuff that they've announced, allowing developers and researchers or medical researchers to get access.
Research kit
that works with HealthKit to get snapshots of data from hundreds of thousands of potential users. I thought that was quite interesting, and it'll be interesting to see what they're going to be doing with that data and that technology going forward. But I thought it was interesting, and I also heard a lot of interesting commentary around it, which really made me think about it a bit more. Thinking, you know, this is something we need to look out for in the future.
But the watch itself, in terms of the design, we've seen it already at the announcement of this device back. When was it now? September, October?
November, I think.
November. Okay. I mean, looking at the different editions they've brought out, there's the sports edition, which is the sport edition, which is the cheapest of them. I think starts at $349 for a smaller version. I think 28 inch was it? No, not inch, 28 millimeters or...
Yeah.
And 32 millimeter version. It was a bit confusing because they kept switching between metric and American formats during the presentation. But the sport edition is the cheapest. The one that comes with the multicolored plastic straps. Starting at $349, really, I guess, aimed at sort of not the serious sports market, because that niche will always be filled by GPS sports watches. But I guess taking aim at devices like the Fitbit, for example, and going a bit beyond that as well, in terms of this being a timepiece that can run applications and do other things.
Yeah, definitely. Well, they need to have that entry price point. I say entry price point loosely, but I mean, they've already. I've seen some reports where they've Apple in the US has already started removing all fitness bands. That's not all other branded fitness bands like Fitbit and Nike.
Oh, really?
So yeah, they're obviously making a massive move to only feature this as their fitness device.
Very interesting. Doesn't Core Group in South Africa also distribute Fitbit?
Yeah. I think we'll probably see a similar action or similar move from them once.
I'm guessing that Fitbit relationship with Core, though, is separate to the Apple one.
It could be. Maybe it must be.
So I wonder if any pressure will be brought to bear on Apple to not stock, or on Core Group rather, to not stock Fitbit products.
Yeah, if the international clout is strong enough, obviously I'm sure it is. It's a difficult fight. I mean, if Apple tells you you can't sell any other fitness products because it's competing with our own, you can't really fight that.
But what is the market? Is this going to be bought by people who've bought Fitbit type devices? Is it the same market, or is this going to have broader appeal? I'm thinking specifically of the Sport Edition here.
I think yes and no. I mean, with any Apple product, there's always this weird X factor that people will flog to get one simply because it's an Apple product and they are fanboys, let's be honest. But I think it's going to bridge this market between those guys that want something more from a fitness band, something that a fitness band can't deliver, and those guys that are kind of ahead of the curve, early adopters types. I think those are going to be the guys that are picking up this technology, because obviously it's an extension of what your cell phone offers you, right, in terms of the notifications.
It's always important to, I guess, to remember that this thing has to be paired to an iPhone.
Yeah, it's not a standalone device. So, I mean, there's your market's essentially only iPhone users then.
Would you consider getting one of these? You're an iPhone user. Would you get one? And if so, which one would you get?
I don't know. No, I don't think I would get one yet. I don't wear a watch to begin with because I can't use it in my daily life when I'm typing on the computer. I remove my watch because it scratches. It's uncomfortable where I wear it. I find the product very interesting, and the way that they've done it, obviously, I think it's a sexy looking smart watch. Not that I've played with any of the others. I'd certainly be more inclined to try this one first as an Apple user, for obvious reasons, but I wouldn't go out and spend one. I think it's too expensive, and in my lifestyle I don't have a need for something that tracks my life like that.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the current exchange rate, this thing isn't going to come in below 5,000 rand for the cheapest one. And that's reasonably pricey for what you're getting. I mean, that's half the cost of an iPhone for the most basic edition.
Yeah, between my MacBook and my iPhone, I really don't have a need for another interface device or another device to give me another screen. But I can certainly see the appeal in it and why people would want it. It looks nice. It's a nice gadget. It's a nice toy. And the fact that it monitors your heart rate all day long means, the data you're going to get from it, if that's the kind of thing you're tracking, I think would be quite accurate. I'm not the target audience for this. I think it's a nice device. It obviously looks great. I haven't seen it in the flesh,
but it
looks very nice. And the fact that you can interchange the bands between them means the guys that will buy the sport would be able to buy a metal strap at some point if they want to, create a different look and feel for their watch. It'll really be interesting to see how the end user is going to, the end consumer is going to be utilizing this in their day to day life. Would you get one?
No.
Easy answer.
There's a fundamental reason I can't get one, and that's that I don't use an iPhone.
Oh, true. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm committed to Android. I'm not going to switch to an iPhone, so that I can use one of these watches. And on that note, I mean, it's not that I'm in any way opposed to Apple or the iPhone. I'm not going to get an Android-powered smartwatch either.
True.
I just don't see the point. I stopped wearing a watch when I got a phone. Because I'm carrying this device in my pocket that can tell me the time. I'm always sitting in front of my computer or in front of my laptop, which has got the time on the screen all the time. So I don't need something that's going to tell me the time. So it has to do something pretty special. I'm a runner, and I have a GPS sports watch, which is a specific device that I put on when I go for a run. And that presents great information to me that's useful to me and that I can share on social networks. I don't need something that's actually less powerful than that GPS sports watch in terms of providing me with a lot of data like my cadence and all that sort of thing, which I don't think you're going to get on this device.
No, I mean, that device is geared exactly to what you need as an athlete or as a runner. I mean, that's going to give you the best version of that. Well, I think what Apple's doing, obviously they're going in for a more general purpose watch, which can still track some of your fitness activities. But I really think it's going to be very much a fashion accessory or gadget a gadget statement. It's the same reason why people, you know, go for iPhones in if they're not really going to use all the functionality on there. It's really a showpiece.
I think the other reason not to get one of these right now is that it's the first generation, and you should never buy the first generation.
Yes, yes.
If you look back at the original iPhone, it was actually crap.
It was.
It was revolutionary, but at the same time, it was crap.
But look at where we are now, and if they can pull the same kind of thing off with watch technology, or at least this type of technology being a hybrid to something else you might wear somewhere else in your body, whether it's around your neck or something. I'm not saying that's the case, but I don't think this is where this technology is going to end up.
No.
Or a wearable. If we see what Google Glass type of technology does, and you pair it with the functionality of something like a watch, with a bit of VR or virtual reality overlays, augmented reality thrown in there, I think you've got a picture of potentially a product that's 10 years down the line that we'll be wearing.
Well, I think the real exciting stuff that's going to come out of these wearable devices, and particularly the smartwatch, and I think with the smartwatch is the format that's going to work. I think Google Glass was dead in the water from the start.
Sure.
I think people don't want to wear stuff on their faces, but I think that I think the smartwatch is the right format. So I think this is the one. If a wearable computing device is going to take off, it's going to be the smartwatch format.
You used to something on your wrist, right?
Exactly.
As a watch,
exactly. But I think and it's comfortable. It's not intrusive. People don't look at you funny, etc. But I think the real I think what's really going to drive this in future is voice recognition technology. Once technologies like Siri on iOS and the voice recognition platform Cortana on Microsoft Google Now, I think it's called. Once those have really matured, and you can see how much they have matured in the last couple of years alone, but imagine what it's going to be like 10 years from now, where you could probably have a natural language conversation with whatever device it happens to be, and watch is an obvious candidate.
Yes.
All the intelligence sits out in the cloud. It doesn't have to sit in the device. It doesn't have to do all the hard work. A watch that isn't paired to your phone, that's connected to a very high-speed wireless broadband network.
Yes.
It's got all this intelligence sitting in the cloud. So you can then sit there and have a conversation, Dick Tracy style, with your watch. and it will provide you with, almost a natural language way, as if you're almost having a conversation with another person. Will provide you with information you need on the go.
Definitely.
It could be incredibly useful. I mean, you can already say to your phone, well, what's the weather like? What's it going to be like tomorrow? How long would it take me to drive? Or give me directions to drive here. But imagine if it can do much more than that. Stuff that can really, I'm not sure. I mean, ask it something like, something complex, like you want to make dinner tonight, but you've forgotten what a particular ingredient is called. So you could just say, if it's a curry, for example, you want to put turmeric in it, but you can't remember turmeric, and you need to go buy it at the store. You could say, what's that yellow stuff you put in curry? And they would say, are you thinking of turmeric? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I have to think we're heading in that direction, and it's going to happen in the next 5-10 years.
I agree. I think the extension of that audio dictation and interacting with your smart device like that is certainly one of the awesome angles of this. And if you remember at the demo, they actually didn't hold the phone up to their I can't remember which demo it was, but they were talking to the watch. But they didn't hold the watch up to their face. It was quite far away from them. So the audio pickup on this must be quite good. And what I liked in one of the demos I saw was if you do dictate to your phone, if you do want to do a message, you can either send it as a voice note or you can send it as the text that it dictates for you, which I thought was quite interesting, especially if you don't want to fiddle with correcting the text on it. Send the audio messages to get your message through, essentially. Obviously, this is a feature that only works on messages on iDevices. But I've just got on the screen here one of the other things that I find quite intriguing. I think this could potentially be one of those wild card features that everybody's going to go crazy over. It's where two devices can connect. So if you and your loved one have one of these devices, you can share your heartbeat and draw on the screen, or you can draw messages to your friends. Either it's a gesture or, are you ready to go, or you tap. I think that is a pretty interesting way to communicate with somebody without sending a message. I think there's potentially something there, and I think people are going to really love that. I mean, the fact that you can tap to somebody to say, I'm downstairs, ready for you, tap, tap, come on, or, like I said, sharing your heartbeat with a loved one. It's weird features, but I think I think they're going to do very well. People like that intimacy. And the technology is allowing us to be intimate in a weird way. I mean, considering the watch will vibrate on your wrist accordingly to that message you're sending. I think it's very interesting.
Yeah,
but anyway, it wasn't just the iWatch. We shouldn't spend too much time.
No, in fact, I think the other product that was announced at the keynote almost stole the show, that's the new MacBook, which is very controversial.
Oh yeah,
it's beautiful, but it's very controversial. Geez, it's thin. 13.1 millimeters, which I think is a good 3 or 4 millimeters thinner than the iPad Air, which is already an incredibly thin laptop. So they really have done marvelous work here from an engineering design perspective.
Oh, yeah.
But one port, what are they thinking?
Yeah, I'm glad they went to a USB standard, USB-C, but I'm not happy the fact that they only put one port in, and the fact that you're going to need the dongle to do more than one USB device connected to it, but also you can't power and get information off a USB stick, for argument's sake.
Apparently you can, using the special $79 adapter that you can plug in. You can plug in your power port and a USB stick at the same time. But
only if you have that.
It really looks like they've over-engineered this thing to me. Why be so stingy? Why not put in a USB port? I mean, the thing's not that thin, is it?
There was certainly seemed to be enough space on the inside when they showed the internals. And then to me, the first thing that I thought was this was literally an iPad with stronger internals that's been given a keyboard, essentially.
It is, yeah. And this is actually, someone pointed out that this is not a high-end MacBook. This is almost this is almost a cross between a low-end iPad Air and an iPad.
Yeah. And I think running iOS.
MacBook Air, yeah. And running iOS and... But if you're looking for a computer that's going to have some processing grunt to do anything beyond email and web browsing, this probably is not the device.
But think of how many people out there that actually just needs a solid device that connects to the internet, does mails, does the internet, does word processing. And for those kind of people, this is the perfect device. It's super thin, it's super light. I mean, it's gorgeous to look at with the three colors, the gold, space gray, and normal gray, I think.
The gold is very porno, isn't it?
It is a bit. But that dark space gray looks absolutely
incredible.
The dark
one looks nice. The space gray does to me as well. Yeah. They've never done that color in a laptop.
No, they haven't. You should also note the other two things that's very important is the key. The new key design and the new trackpad.
The keyboard is great.
Yeah.
Apple's always done a great job with its keyboards. There are only two PC companies. I can't really call them PC companies. Sure. Two computer manufacturers that make decent keyboards.
Mm.
One is Apple and the other is Lenovo.
Yeah, I agree. I've always liked the Apple. Well, I mean, the Lenovo that I used last year definitely had one of the best keyboards. I still prefer the Apple keyboard. Maybe it's just because I've been using it for a much longer time. But it'll be interesting to see their new keyboard technology, because the keys, they've taken away that scissor mechanism, or that, what do they call
it?
Yeah,
scissor mechanism, yeah. They've replaced it with something else.
And they were talking about the wobble on the keys, and I never noticed it until you tap on the sides of your current MacBook, and there is a bit of wobble. Not that it's ever bothered me.
Never noticed it before, but yes, you're right.
They actually removed that, and by spacing the keys slightly wider. Mm. So apparently the keys are the same distance from each other. They're just slightly thicker on the sides, on the top and the sides.
Mm.
So less likely to miss a key, I believe. And then obviously the trackpad, which is one solid piece, and it's
bigger.
Haptic controls,
controls, they call it.
Haptic feedback, sorry.
So you can deep depress or soft depress on the thing. I'm not quite sure how that's going
to
work.
Yeah, so practice, apparently what happened was the trackpad slides to the side, so it doesn't go in deeper, but when you press it hard, it slides slightly to the side with the vibration feedback.
It's got like four sensors underneath it or something.
Yes.
It looks beautiful. It's absolutely stunning. I can't imagine that a laptop computer is ever going to get another one of those.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and also the batteries can only be a certain size, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
but that's the other innovation that they put in this thing, is they've made use of these sheet batteries effectively that make you much better use of the space inside the machine, so that the battery life is reasonable as well.
I mean, you saw the insides. I mean, the circuit board for the computer
is tiny.
It's probably the size of a touchpad.
Shrunk by 66%. Yeah,
this
is basically an iPad and a laptop.
Yeah. It's certainly a marvel of engineering. I think it's going to do well. It's certainly computers do go thinner and smaller.
This will certainly appeal to people who are not power users, who just need a a basic computer to surf the web and do their email, that sort of thing. Not for someone who wants to fire up and edit pictures in Photoshop or edit video. But it is a remarkable piece of design, I have to say. I love the trackpad. I think that's one thing where Apple's really done well is in the trackpads. In fact, until Apple really bought out these big trackpads, the PC vendors had these tiny little trackpads the size of matchboxes. Remember those things? They're terrible.
Never understood why they did that. And the gesture controls on the trackpad now is very good. I use a few of them and I really enjoy it. I think Apple is one of the few companies that can produce a product like this that's so far from what we are used to and what we potentially want. Because they can set a standard. We've seen this so many times before, and that's why the Apple Watch is probably going to do well, because you know they just have the company just has this incredible force around it. People love to embrace it.
I just hope that I imagine if I had one of these, it would frustrate me no end having just that single port, and the fact that I'd have to carry around some sort of special dongle with me that I'd no doubt lose or forget to pack if I go on an overseas trip.
Totally. But this will make an amazing secondary computer potentially if you do go traveling and just want something light to access your Word documents, or if you go out to an interview, or if you go out to a function. It's probably an expensive second device. But I can see people, you know, using it for that kind of purpose. You know, it's not the power horse. It's other device. It's like your iPad, just with a keyboard.
Good. Well, look forward to actually seeing those in the market and getting a review one to play around with and having a proper look at it.
Yeah, I certainly won't be letting go of my MacBook just yet. I think I still need the power, without a doubt.
Yeah, me too. Good. Well, let's move on. I wanted to just talk briefly. Unfortunately, he couldn't be here this afternoon, but I wanted to chat briefly about a great story that our colleague Sunil Gopal, who joined Tech Central a couple of weeks ago, broke today about what's going on at the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services. Huge drama. Go check the story out on the website. It's a very good piece. Basically, one of the deputy directors general at the department, Gifford Lazy, who's been there for many years, was given his marching orders by the director general via an SMS while he was on holiday. And all sorts of there's all sorts of drama going on there about SIU investigations and backstabbing and who may be responsible for what and cleaning out the department. Anyway, go read the piece. It's worrying, but provides great insight into what's going on in the department that's supposed to be working on so many important projects at the moment, like a policy on high demand spectrum allocation and many other things. So go check it out. That's a piece by Sunil. Go have a read. It's very good. I want to just have a brief chat before we move on about new piece of legislation that may be incoming. I forget what it's called now. I must actually bring up the piece on my screen. But it's
Cybercrimes and Related Matters Bill.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that's it.
It's new legislation that government is in the early stages of working on. It's a draft document that's been put out for discussion, bill. Which really looks at creating structures to fight cybercrime and cyber terrorism in South Africa. And it really is proposing the establishment of quite an expansive new bureaucracy within the government. And I would say expansive and no doubt expensive as well. Looking almost creating an NSA type structure in the South African government. And they're looking at creating a whole range of these things under the police, under the defense force, under the telecoms department, under state security, and these things all being staffed with agents from the state security agency. All of this being done, so I must say this is all in draft form for discussion at the moment, but all this being done in the name of fighting cyber crime. It proposes the identification and declaration of what are called national critical information infrastructures.
Sheesh.
Goodness knows what what those are going to be, but that's what is being proposed in here. They're proposing the creation of a cyber response committee, a cyber security center, a range of cyber security incident response teams, etc., etc., and a cyber command sitting under the South African National Defence Force, as well as a cyber security hub. So a lot of bureaucracy being established here, and this is just, I guess, the start of the story. And you know, as this develops, and as, if this bill makes any further progress through legislative processes, I guess it's going to get interrogated in a lot more detail, and needs to be. But first, insights into what government may be thinking around fighting on online terrorism and online crime. Well worth having a look at that, and also going to have a look at the bill. It's a very long document, but well worth read if you're interested in the subject.
Yeah, it's worrying. I mean, if they can get it right, it'd be one thing. But let's be honest. I mean, it's not going to be smooth sailing by any means.
Mm.
Even with the best intentions, and I can fully understand why we need counter cyber security or terrorism.
Mm.
But this seems to be a bit of an overkill in terms of each of the departments and,
yeah,
and each of the teams I want to set up here. I don't know. It doesn't seem good.
Mm.
Too good. Let's hope it takes a while to get off the ground.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that covers the news for this week. Let's move on to our regular features. We don't have a winner this week, but we do have a loser. I think it was an easy pick, Cell C.
Mm.
Their network fell over this morning, basically. But that's not the reason we're making them the loser. Technical problems happen from time to time. But they're blaming a major fiber break for the downtime. Apparently there was some issue linking their two data centers together. Mm. It just raises questions about, you know, where's the redundancy?
Yeah.
If you have a fiber break, I mean, surely the fiber break doesn't affect two points at the same time.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, in the lack of, we don't have full details of exactly what happened, but certainly their explanation suggests that there may be a lack of redundancy, which caused this problem. So our loser this week is Cell C. What's your pick this week, Richard?
So the pick, it's something that you may have seen popping up on Twitter a few times. It's an app called Meerkat. And what makes this very interesting is that it allows you to stream live via Twitter, any feed.
Live,
yeah. So if I just going, I can just go stream. I press stream, it wants to access my camera.
Yeah.
And then what the app does, it posts a link to my
Twitter feed. Do you want to do a test one? So
it should actually, if you go look on my Twitter feed right now,
yeah,
you should see a link has been posted.
Can I look at this in TweetDeck or do I need
to? Yeah, TweetDeck, okay. It should be fine. Because it just takes you through to the Meerkat website. And it basically just brings up the feed live,
okay,
on that website.
I see the link, so I'll click on that, okay.
And then what's nice is you can actually see on the the first purpose of this is for you to live stream any event that you may be at or anything that you want to show in real time.
Okay, it says I must log in with Twitter.
You don't have an account yet.
Right.
You can just log in with Twitter. I mean, I don't know if you'd want to do that.
Well, let me try it, as long as it doesn't tweet on my behalf.
Well, it will tweet if you initiate a stream, but you're not going to.
So, that's of course. Okay, all right. I'll give it a try.
See who's following you, and it's a nice looking app, but the fact that it's very functional, I think, is what's going to make it a big hit. There were some people that are actually streaming the Apple conference on Monday using Meerkat. There was quite a few people sending out their streams into the world.
There we go.
So yeah, you can see, I mean, the quality is quite good. The only downside is you can't do landscape mode, it's only portrait. The other thing you might see, the downside with this is the screen that you're seeing on your PC, it'll try and fill the frame, your window. So you actually need to resize your window slightly to get
better. Oh, I see. So it's best to actually see this on another phone.
Oh, okay. Or you just shrink down your screen there.
Okay.
But it's nice. It's functional. Cool. And it works well. I mean, you can see that it's pretty responsive.
Yeah.
But imagine being either at an event or breaking news somewhere. I mean, if you see something happening in the street,
that's fantastic.
Throw up a live stream. This is going to do a lot, not just for media, but I think for people that want to create little channels where they share their lives. I mean, it's not quite Snapchat, but it's a different league.
This is great. I can see applications here for journalists,
definitely. And obviously there's a live chat, so you can follow chat, you can send messages, you can see who's actually watching you and who's participating. It's a very slick app.
Going to chow a lot of bandwidth.
It is going to. I haven't tried it yet, but obviously I haven't monitored the bandwidth. But we are over your Wi-Fi now, so it's good.
Yeah.
I think it's good. Well worth checking out Meerkat. It's only available on iOS for now. I think there is an app for Android, but you can only view. You can't create.
No, that's very great. That's actually excellent. I'm going to I don't have an iPhone, but I'll try this on my iPad. Looks cool.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time before Android will get the streaming version. It's really nice. It's an interesting app.
Yeah. Cool. My pop pick this week is something I think it's... I've actually been wondering why Microsoft has taken so darn long to actually do this. The new Microsoft Office for Mac is fantastic. It's always felt like Microsoft Office has been a bit of a poor second cousin on Mac compared to Windows. Yeah. And the new version, which is currently in preview and available for free, by the way, if you want to download it, it looks fantastic. It's been designed for Retina displays, and it's looks like the Windows version now. It's really caught up, and
I think it looks a bit better than Windows version with on a Retina display.
Yeah, you're right, and it really works. It's bizarre. I mean, technically, there's nothing different. In terms of what the software does, in terms of writing a document, for example.
Yeah.
But I actually feel more productive using it, and I don't know why.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I mean, I've been using it for a week as well, and it
looks better. It's so and I much feel more comfortable using it.
Yeah, it's so much. You do feel more productive, but I think it's just because Office or Outlook looks so much better now.
Outlook
all of a sudden, yeah.
Massively improved. But the other apps as well, PowerPoint, Word, and Excel, they look like the Windows versions now. And the Windows versions look good. Well done to Microsoft. In fact, I've just updated my... I've been using Pages, which is a Mac app on my laptop for ages, when I'm not switching between Windows devices. And it's good software. It's the Apple word processing package. But I've gone back to Office now, and I've actually subscribed to Office 365 for another year.
Nice, yeah.
$1,000 or so. I think it was 1,080 Rand with VAT. But not so much because it's Office, although the new version for Mac was certainly helped sway me in that direction. But it's the fact that I was running out of space on Dropbox, and I have 30 gigs of space on Dropbox. I think I've got it through various phone upgrades over the years and that sort of thing. But I'm actually running out of space. I've almost filled up my Dropbox. And Microsoft Office now comes with 10 terabytes. They advertise 1 terabyte, but I've got 10 terabytes when I signed up of capacity on OneDrive, which is the same price. It would cost me the same for that amount of storage space on Dropbox as I paid for Office.
Yeah.
Which comes
including
with,
your storage.
Including the 10 terabytes of storage. And Dropbox is just 1 terabyte of storage.
Yeah.
So it's a no-brainer. Basically, let's buy some storage on OneDrive and get a free copy of Microsoft Office for a year in the process. Yeah.
And you do kind of need Office, let's be honest. Outlook is still one of the de facto mailing tools, especially if you do a lot of calendaring and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
As much as I enjoy Google.
If you just do mail, you could get away with a free application like Mailbox or Thunderbird or something. But for proper productivity, nothing beats Outlook.
Yeah, no, for sure. Now it's going to be good to see. I haven't seen any bugs in this version. It seems pretty solid to me. It's pretty
solid.
Stable.
Solid for a preview. Yeah. It hasn't crashed once. Unlike Chrome, which crashes on me all the time now. And I'm not using the developer preview build.
Yeah. Hmm. No, it was exciting to see that they're actually giving the Mac and the attention it deserves again. And, like you said, it's well worth spending that. I spend, 90 Rand a month or 70 Rand a month, I think. I pay for mine. Because I also did the Dropbox thing and spending $9 a month on Dropbox or $7 or something, or $8, I think, is the same as for Office. And you get storage. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But certainly it changed Microsoft. I mean, you see it on everything. I'm on my Android device now. I've got Office on here. Sure, it's nothing fancy, but it allows me to read Office documents. I've got Microsoft Outlook on here, although it's still in very early stages compared to the iOS version of Outlook. But so I'm still using something called Nine, which is a great app.
Nine is nice, yeah.
It's cool to see these other ecosystems, these other platforms, not being treated by Microsoft as second-class citizens anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
It's no longer Windows first. Everything else can come...
Come second.
But and it's showing benefits, and I think it's actually good for Microsoft.
Oh yeah, it's very good. They had to move away from this, to being on one platform and only doing that well. Now that they're actually giving the other platforms attention, I mean, like you said, on your Android and iOS, any iOS device now, I mean, you can have a solid Microsoft Office experience. No, I'm very happy with that.
Anyway, I think that's the show for the week. We apologize for the background doof doof sound about halfway through the podcast. I think someone's getting ready for an early Friday party.
You could go join them. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, indeed. It is. We are recording this quite late on a Friday. It's actually half past five already, so it's time for the weekend to start.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, as always, if you've got any feedback, send us a mail. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za, or just leave a comment on the post. We'd love to hear from you. Until next week, from Richard and myself, take care. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.